Predictor. Over to you. I'm sorry, he has joined now. You
Oh,
can speak to him.
okay. Okay. Come in and you're welcome, Honorable Dennis. Is Honorable Christians still coming? Honorable Ryder?
Yeah, good evening, Chair. I note that the whole of Acacia still has a load shedding, so
Oh.
yeah, I think she'll be joining us shortly, but she did ask and she did say she'd join us at 6.
Okay. Lubabalo is Honorable Detroit on the platform, and Mletani, I think Mletani is also affected. Is he not staying at Acacia unless he's somewhere else?
Evening,
Ntate
Chair.
Mletani.
Both.
Ntate Mletani, are you here? Honorable Detroit.
I'm here, Chairperson. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. At least wena wa bona o kgona go itlhabana o tsoletse mo gare ga yona load shedding. Ke leboga go fitlha gago. You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Detroit. Oh.
Evening, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I'm here at the parliamentary offices as a result of this load shedding. So I'm on the platform, yes.
Yeah. I also see something that I commented on to Dr. Chanchis, but I will not take that chances now. The recording is on. Honorable members, let us not waste more time. The other members who are experiencing load shedding will be joining us as when we go on. The agenda is on the screen. I hope you can all see it. I also, oh, Acacia, the electricity is back on. Hopefully they will be joining us. But let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody on the platform, starting with the Dr. Chanchis, who's leading PBO, and coming here this meeting specifically to give them the platform, the hearing, and also engage on the briefing that they're going to give us in connection with the Department of Social Development and Basic Education between the two financial years. And also appreciating the presence by the acting DG from DSD with their agencies. The full house is here. And maybe from me, before we even deal with the apologies, let me note and acknowledge the apology from the Minister of Social Development, Mezulu, who is with the question and answer session in the NA. Somebody's mic is on. If you can check. Also welcoming, I was made to understand that, DSD is so proactive. They also invited their colleagues from their counterparts from the provinces. So we have members from provinces. I have confirmed the is it Honorable Hu Mkhwanazi from KZN is here, is with us on the platform. So you are all welcome, honorable members and colleagues and everybody, all the stakeholders on the platform. I also want to extend my appreciation for your support, honorable members, during my difficult times, though I'm still not there, but with your prayers and your well wishes, I'm getting there steady but sure. Thank you so much for the support. We'll step off from item number one and go to number two, Secretariat Lubabalo. And Estelle, any apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you so much. Good evening, Chairperson, and good evening, honorable members and colleagues. Chair, from the committee, we have the apology of Honorable Okamp, and also Chairperson, the Minister of Basic Education. I doubt if you will be able to make it because from our side, we only unfortunately communicated with the department once we received this presentation, which reflected Department of Basic Education information. So that's when we started communication with the department because we were not anticipating that it was going to cover basic education. So I also want to tender that apology in advance, Chairperson. Thank you. Oh. Before you take over, Chair, there are a few colleagues who have joined. I think that one colleague is ITED, and then the other one joined using gadget 5488161. If they may please assist us identify themselves so that we can assist in terms of renaming their gadget, that will assist the meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Good evening. Janine Abercrombie from the Western Cape Social Development. That's 5488161.
Sorry, Lubabalo, did you get the name from the colleague? From Western Cape.
In fact, Chairperson, I just cut corners because I don't have time. I just wrote Western Cape DSD.
Okay. Who else?
The other one is marked iPad. Is it not Honorable Karim by any chance?
No. Chair, perhaps you can get that name typed in the chat.
No, I'm here in my normal iPad. Lubabalo?
No,
it's my normal iPad, unless something has happened that changed it, but I didn't change it. Mine is, I think, Yunus, my Karim iPad. Does it not show there?
Oh, yes. Yours is correct, Chairperson. It's Yunus Karim iPad. The other one is iPad only.
My apologies. Chairperson, it's me. I am Tavani Tennis from Social Development. I've been trying to rename my iPad, but Tabanitel is the official from the National Department of Social Development. Thank you, sir. My apologies.
Thank you so much, Mr. Pteles. Chairperson, over to you. I will continue renaming Mr. Pteles. Over to you, Chairperson. You can take over in the process.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I did send on the chat group notice that we've got load shedding here. And sometimes my Vodacom works, sometimes it doesn't. The other device we have here lasts for half an hour and then seems to fade. So let's see what happens. So if I get cut off, I'll join you at 8 fully. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Okay. I was about to talk about that one because you have sent me a message informing me that you're going to experience load shedding and is the exact time that I'm going to experience load shedding. Let's just hope that and pray that we will push and our gadgets will not disappoint us until we get there. We are noting the apologies as presented and also that of the honorable members from Acacia, but specifically Honorable Nita. But Honorable Ryder is saying the load shedding, the electricity is back in Acacia. Hopefully she'll be joining us. Let's step off from that item to go to item number 3 and hand over to Dr. Janjis and your team, Dr. Janjis.
Good evening, Chairperson. Can you hear me, ma'am?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Thank you so much. I just got hit by load shedding myself. So if I'm struggling, please do bear with me. Good evening, Chairperson. Good evening, members. Good evening, colleagues. Thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity to brief the committee this series of our understanding session. We spoke to the team that I've got all the team of PBU on the platform, but we did say that we'll try to recognize that the committee has been busy all the day and highlight some of the key areas. And we really appreciate that the provinces and departments are also on the platform. Thank you so much for that. I'll just give a quick introduction, and I'll give to the team to take us through quickly around the presentation itself. We're covering both the social development, but also some emphasis on education, particularly on conditional grants. Also, I'm from some highlights in that regard. Let's go to the fourth slide, Busi. I think just a quick recap, Chair and members. There has been a lot of debate around the government department's capacity to spend the budgets over time. And we've really come to a point where we can all agree that there has been a clear evidence that government departments and entities continue to underspend their budget every year. We've seen it over the lot of years. And what has been lacking in our view in the discussion, the debate, as largely here in Parliament, but elsewhere, also in government, other forums, is a consensus about the extent of this underspending and an important understanding of the root cause of this underspending. We've seen so much in all the spheres of government. What we have done, we've been undertaking, of course, with the guidance and support of the committees, a very more of a longitudinal analysis in order to provide the insights and really context of the underspending from government, particularly to support the oversight process. Our concern, Chair, members and colleagues here, is that underspending is being used to justify reduction in budget, government budget baseline, despite the fact that there's evidence that shows that these budget reductions may have contributed to the same underspend that we see in many of these areas, whereby the program is undercut, and as a result, you'll have to underspend regardlessly. And that the reduction of spending undermines the much-needed service delivery and economic development programs that are set out in various areas of government. But it's clear that from the work that we've done over the past year or so, and also when you look at the literature around underspending, that despite underspending in certain areas, the level of service delivery and infrastructure development has continued to grow over time and expect that to grow as well over time. So it's important that the thinking discussion around it is within that context. Next slide, Busi. And I think what we're trying to emphasize, you have already so far, as I said, it's a series of work that we've done on underspending. We've looked at education and higher education, and we also look at health as well for both national provinces. And this time we focus social development and some of the specific areas on the conditional grant. The annual budget, we want to emphasize that the importance of the annual budget is a key policy tool, used to implement the national development plan and other strategies of government. It's very important to be seen in that context. And adherence to the planned budget is an important indicator of the overall capability of government services. The purpose of this presentation, as I said, is to share this insight of the work that we've done. And also we put more focus on SDR, some of the issues around that, which led to underspending, and highlight some of the key findings, some of the proposed way forward in this regard. In those few notes, I'll just want to give the team to take us through, and I'll come in later with some of the concluding remarks in that regard. Siraj, you want to take through?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Go ahead. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I do have load shedding at the moment, started at 6 as well, but I'll take you through. Busi, can you move to the first slide on situational analysis, please? So just to give some context, we know that large proportions of the South African population are subject to debilitating poverty and unemployment, and institutional support currently is inadequate. So according to the SASSA 2022-23 APP, South Africa does have the most expansive social grant system in the world. We have 47% of the population relying on the monthly grant, but this is in a country with what can be classified as obscene levels of inequality. And so it's not surprising that we have those levels of people relying on grants. The failure to address unemployment combined with inadequate social provision has caused the persistence of structural unemployment, poverty, and inequality, and the result has been long-term cumulative negative impacts on households, communities, and societies. The graph on the right show in 2021 both the levels of income inequality and wealth inequality. We see with wealth inequality, the top 10% owning 85.7% of the wealth, and within that, the top 1% owning over 50%, more than half, but 55% of the wealth. If you look at the bottom 50% of the population, they actually have negative wealth of minus 2.5% because of debt within that. Next slide, please. Now, the majority of South Africans live in poverty, and our president has said that African women are the face of poverty. And if you look at the work that Stats South Africa has done, the profile of a subjectively poor household in South Africa is one located in lower quintiles of the income distribution, in a rural area, in a rural province, where have lower levels of education, headed by a Black African female younger than 35 who has been provided with low levels of education, where the general health status of the household is poor, where it's more than likely that all economically active individuals aged 15 years and above are unemployed, and these households would be less happy than they were 10 years ago. Now we see that between 2011 and 2015, 3 million people were pushed into poverty, and more than a quarter of the population lived in extreme poverty, unable to afford enough food to meet their basic physical needs. Next slide, please. Now, part of the problem is related to also to the levels of child poverty. And we're seeing that even though the child support grant covers 13 million children, because of the extraordinary levels of structural unemployment, poverty, and inequality, we've created a situation where child poverty remains a dire problem that continues to grow. 6 out of 10 children are multidimensionally poor. We can maybe discuss that later in question time, what that means. Stats South Africa data shows that child poverty rates have been consistently higher than those of the adult population. We see that in the most recent estimates that we have, about two-thirds of children are living in poverty. Stats South Africa also shows that the number of orphans is increasing. I want to read the numbers. I think we can all see that. In 2020, 620,000 children were recorded as double orphans. In 2019, there were about 26,000 children living in child-only households across South Africa. That equates to about 0.1% of all the children in the country. And next slide, please. So what we're seeing is an ongoing intense long-term cost of living crisis. The percentage of households that had limited access to food has increased from 17.8% to 20.9% from 2019 to 2021. And the percentage of people with more limited access to food increased from 19.5% in 2019 to 23.8% in 2021. These graphs show the changes over time. Next slide, please. There was a household affordability index developed based on women who struggled with low incomes in the major centers, plus Springbok and Pietermaritzburg, who contributed to the development of the index by giving input on the household food basket used in the index. And the index includes foods and volumes of these foods required by women living in a family of 7 members, which is the average low-income household size. And what they found is that the monthly average household food basket of 5,081 rand costs more than the minimum wage of 4,270 in 2023. So in South Africa, we often talk about the working poor, and we can understand why that is, that even if people are employed in this economy with very high unemployment, people are still struggling to actually meet the basic food requirements. Next slide, please. So in terms of the state of social welfare, the high levels of inequality and poor economic growth threaten to increase political and social instability. The budget is important. Through social welfare and improved quality and quantity of services, it plays an important distributive role that reduces inequality and improves the chance for economic growth. That's often an issue that we miss, is that how reducing inequality, but also getting more money into the pockets of the poor and access to services and growing people's health and productivity, we actually support growth in the economy. DSD has noted that in addition to unemployment, poverty and inequality, social ills have been growing at an unprecedented rate, including gender-based violence, child abuse, substance and alcohol abuse, and increased teenage pregnancies, etc. The department also notes that historically an underfunded department, it is an underfunded department that has to respond to abject poverty by providing social relief measures, it provides psychosocial support services, which become in demand during disasters, COVID-19, and any other incident of violence and or loss of life. According to the DSD, the country needs 55,000 social workers to meet the demand for appropriate basic social welfare services in South Africa. There are currently 22,000 social workers employed in the public service to communities around the country. And despite the need for social workers in the country, around 9,000 qualified social workers remain unemployed, reportedly due to funding constraints, lack of capacity, and lack of adequate tools of trade within the department. Next slide, please. Okay, I will hand over to my next colleague to take over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Siraj. Good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. My name is Razgaz Mpinzi, and I'll be taking you through the next few slides. In terms of budget allocations, the nationally raised government revenue is divided between the three spheres of government in a form of equitable share and conditional grants. The equitable division of revenue raised nationally among spheres of government is divided according to a formula. National government makes conditional allocations to provinces to supplement the funding of programs for specific purpose allocations to provinces and also for designated special programs. The services offered by the Department of Social Development are provided by the provincial sphere of government, and this, of course, excludes social grants. Provincial DSD is then funded through the provincial equitable share. It is also funded through transfers from the National Department of Social Development in the form of conditional grants. And in addition to this, DSD currently has no conditional grants since the Early Childhood Development Program has been moved to the Department of Basic Education. Social grants are also transferred to the South African Social State Security Agency. National DSD also transferred approximately 95% of its budget to SASSA for the administration of social grants. Next slide, please. In terms of social grant levels in real terms, we see that social grants have increased by 5% on average in 2023-2024. These increases are inadequate. This graph then shows us that majority of social grants fall above the upper bound poverty line, except the child support grant and the foster care grant. The 500 Rand social child support grant is below the food poverty line of 663 Rand, and it is also below the average cost to feed a child a basic nutrition diet of 899 Rand 54 cents in real terms. Next slide, please. I'll now hand over to my next colleague to take you through the next slide. Thank you.
Good evening, colleagues, and good evening, honourable members. I'll be taking us through the methodological approach that we took to assessing understanding. And so this slide here is showing you that basically from a quantitative perspective, we looked at adjusted budgets versus the audited outcomes. We also looked at the annual reports to try and collate in a systematic fashion why there's underspending or the reasons that were documented by the departments. We also note here that we only chose certain provinces, and this was supposed to represent the rural-urban divide as well as the diversity in the equitable share distribution amongst provinces in South Africa, so we did not look at all nine provinces, but also to highlight the limitation of our work here is to say that it does not indicate the quality of spend, but rather we just looked at the numbers at a high level. So the AGSA has noted this issue in the past. So when we look at the spending trends at a national level, we see that under and overspending on total budget of the department was less than 2% per year for the period 2011-12 to 2020-21, except for 2019-20 when the department overspent by 7.8%. I'm not sure if you can see my what do you call it here, pointer, but it's over here. But we see largely that there's little under or overspending. And this is because majority of money is, of course, transferred. And SASSA does spend majority of the money that is given. We've added an additional slide on performance. And you can see there with the grants that majority of them were actually spent at high levels, over 90% for the most part. So here we show that at the economic classification level, underspending was largely driven by transfers and subsidies and partly by current payments. I also want to draw your attention here to that, to the fact that there was a lot of underspending to households. So on this bullet here, under transfers and subsidies. So households, there was significant underspend, and that is something that we should be looking at. The reasons for underspending, and this comes from the annual reports, I'll just highlight the broad ones, which is that there's supply chain management problems. And so these are include lengthy procurement processes, for example. Compensation of employees was also another driver of underspending. Vacant posts not being filled. And of course, vacant posts can also be a function of inadequate budget itself, combined with other factors. There were also challenges with new programs, which is not surprising because getting new programs off the ground can sometimes be challenging. And so, for example, when the ECD was still within DSD, there was some delays in finalizing the project there. And there's been delays in project completion. This includes suppliers not delivering on services. And delays in invoicing. So this has more to do with the accounting part of it and submission of invoices not being finalized before the financial year end. In terms of at the provincial level, we see that there was significant underspending. The Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and the Western Cape, we can see there. But we can see also that the Western Cape underspent more in 2019-2020 and 2020-21, whereas before that it was below 2%. And we apply a 2% threshold because we understand that in the PFMA, there is an allowance for basically departments to request for spend up by more, 2% more. And so we apply that threshold as the lower bound as well, which is why we consider more than 2% to be significant. You can see there that in the Eastern Cape, that there's been significant underspend, meaning more than 2% from 2017-18. In the Free State, it started a bit earlier, 2016-2017, up until 2020-21. And in Gauteng, we're seeing here from 2018-2019, going forward. And I think some of these things we should be asking is why, you know, the increases in underspending over time. At the provincial level, the reasons were similar, but can be slightly different from the national. Of course, the compensation of employees, they can post rising there again in multiple programs. And of course, as my colleague Siraj has noted, that there's a significant shortage of employees in the sector. There's been delays, process delays, especially, for example, allocation letters and terms of reference for implementation, supply chain management processes, delays in project completion, which is similar to the national, and delays in invoicing. So we're seeing some parallels between the national and the provincial. I'll now go into the underspending of the COVID-19 SRD grant, which is some of the work that the PBO has been doing in tracking the SRD grant. One of the things we've noted in the past, and I think members will remember, is that in budget 2022, 44 billion was allocated to DSD to serve 10.5 million. However, DSD had noted that they were targeting about 10.9 million people, which means that the money that was allocated was below what DSD needed. And so what that led to is that DSD had to change the criteria to be able to fit into the budget that had been allocated to them. I won't go in too much into the graphs below, but it's basically showing that the total number of SRD grants that were approved were significantly low in 2022 at some point at 6.5 million. And they did gradually increase. And then also the payment was quite slow. And of course, there were a lot of issues around processes there as well. So DSD amended their criteria, which also meant that more people could actually fall in, could be eligible for the grant. And here we note that the PBO in the MCPPS 2022, we had expected or had projected that the spend against the total budget by DSD would be about 63.6%, given the number of people that had been approved by the DSD at the time. And we see now with the data, the latest data from DSD, that they actually spent 68.69%. So our projections weren't far off. But what we were indicating here was that the criteria that had been applied would mean by default that the DSD would have to, or SASA would have to underspend. So there's been also shifting of funds. So when this understanding was projected, and of course, it was widely known that this would happen, what ended up happening is that there was shifting of funds between votes of 3.7 billion, and there was also 1.8 billion declared unspent funds and projected underspending. And so 5.5 billion was shifted away from social development. And this is in the context where about 3.1 to 5.9 million people in the target group were not receiving the grant in the target group that had been identified by DSD. And so many people who should be eligible and many people who need it were being excluded from this grant. And those many people are the ones who fall below the upper bound poverty line. More than 9 billion of the estimated expenditure was not spent in 2022-23. We now find ourselves in a place where there are many people applying for the grant. So the lessons from this are quite significant. I'll now pass on the presentation to my next colleagues.
Good evening, members and other participants. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to take you through the situational analysis of the education sector. Next slide, please. While there have been significant gains in access to education, according to the 2021 General Household Survey Report, which essentially tracks the progress of development in South Africa, released by StatsSA in June 2022, the attendance for children aged 0 to 4 in grade R, preschool, nursery school, creche and education care centres declined from 36.8% in 2019 to 28.5% in 2021. Children from low income or poorer households are often found staying at home with their parents or guardians instead of attending early childhood development centers, as shown on the graph on the right hand side, which I'll go to into a little bit later in more detail. Socioeconomic status influences educational access. A higher percentage of individuals aged 18 to 24 from low-income households are in secondary education compared to those from higher-income households. Conversely, youth aged 18 to 24 from the highest income households are more likely to attend university compared to those from lower income quartiles. Now, essentially, the graph on the right-hand side, I'll try to go through it quite quickly. This graph was constructed using data from Statistics South Africa. Essentially, it shows us the trends of participation in education amongst children, specifically aged 0 to 4 years old. From a South African education sector lens, schools are categorized into quintiles from 1 to 5, primarily to determine the level of funding they will receive from government. The quintiles of school is determined by the socioeconomic conditions of the community around the school, amongst other factors. Now, quintile 1 to quintile 3 are poorer communities. These schools don't primarily charge school fees and get more funding from government, while quintile 4 to quintile 5 schools are more in affluent communities, though they receive less government funding and usually charge school fees. In 2021, what is interesting is that attendance of schools or ECD facilities was 18.1% in poorer income group, that's quintile 1, and almost tripled to 60.3% for the highest income group, which is quintile 5. Conversely, children in poorer households, which is quintile 1 and quintile 2, were more likely to stay at home with their parents or guardians, as shown by that orange column, compared to those from higher income households. Next slide, please. I'll try to quickly go through this. So a few other trends that are important to share are from several publications on the education sector. First is Oxford University published a report on early grade reading in South Africa in December 2022. According to the publication, less than 50% of grade one children learned the letters of the alphabet by the end of grade one. The latest international reading literacy study results shows that 81% of grade four learners in South Africa are unable to read full meaning. I'll skip the next point and quickly go to the last point in the interest of connectivity. In considering the 2021 budget, the National Treasury acknowledged that low growth combined with early retirement will reduce the number of available teachers. This, coupled with rising number of learners, implies that classes will be bigger, especially in no-fee schools, and this will affect learning outcomes. Next slide, please. So this slide looks at the underspending trends provincially. We use the same approach to analyze provincial underspending trends for education as we did for social development. The text that is in red essentially indicates underspending, and the percent columns can be interpreted as underspending as a proportion of the total adjusted budget. As a quick refresher, we evaluated four provinces, namely Eastern Cape, Free State, Gauteng, and Western Cape, for the same reasons indicated earlier on the methodology slide over the 10-year period. Big picture is that departments across provinces experience underspending of the budget, ranging from as little as 0.1% to as much as 6.4%. Next slide, please. Now, the main reasons for underspending in provincial departments can be grouped into seven key areas. Some of these areas are because of actually good measures that have been implemented, and others are primarily driven by red tape and process-related matters. Specifically, number one, supply chain management problem. Now, this includes delays in procurement and the late receipt of invoices from service providers. Number two is compensation of employees. There have been slow processes in filling of posts, delayed payment processes for both school-based educators and non-educator posts in the public schools. Number three is non-implementation of projects, /programs. These are challenges from unresolved land issues for projects associated with special schools. Additionally, delays in environmental assessments have hindered project progress. Number four is process delays. Notably, they've been holed up in awarding of tenders. Number five is cash flow problems. These are problems that have arisen from known processing of payments. Number six is efficiency measures. Departments we've seen have been enforcing efficiency and cost containment strategies to prevent excess spending, which is essentially a good story. And number seven is the reprioritization of funds. Some budgets have, we've seen, have been redirected to address other financial pressures in different areas. Next slide. Thank you, members. I will give the next section to my colleagues in the policy cluster.
Thank you very much, Kagiso. Good evening, honorable members and colleagues. I'm going to take you through the conditional grants for the Department of Basic Education. We look at this table here, which indicates all the six conditional grants under the Department of Basic Education. We show the audited outcomes from 2020 financial year, and we show also the revised medium-term expenditure estimates and also the annual average increase in 2019-2020 financial year. So you can see the education infrastructure and the national school nutrition program grants are the largest grants combined, accounting for more than 90% of the total education conditional grants. And all conditional grants increase over the MTEF, but the annual average allocation growth rate is between 0.4% and 28.6%. The early childhood development grant is the fastest growing grant, averaging an annual increase of 28.6%. Next slide. So in terms of the underspending for the conditional grants under the Department of Basic Education, when we look at the year under consideration for the study, between 2011, 2012, and 2021, 22, the analysis shows that the learners, the grant for learners with severe profound intellectual disability incurred an underspending of more than 2% in the 7 years of the 10 years of analysis. And underspending on the HIV and AIDS life skill education grant varied between 2.9% and 8.1% before 2017-18, but it has since improved and recorded that all funds were spent in the last 4 years. Next slide. So when we look at the performance on conditional grants, go to the next slide, Boosty. This information is included in the next slide. We look at the methodology that the PBO used in terms of analyzing the performance of the conditional grant. So for PBO to determine the efficiency and effectiveness of the expenditure of nationally raised revenue, it is important to have access to the following quality and complete set of performance information to evaluate the performance outcome of expenditure, and also to have performance indicators should be specific, relevant, and linked to the budget. We also need a series of continuous data to measure change over time to determine impact or effectiveness. So in terms of the conditional grants under basic education, the performance information from the 2020-2021 financial year and 2021-2022 annual reports for the National Department of Basic Education and the 2023 DORA was arranged according to the following. So we had a column for the purpose of the conditional grants. We had a column for the outcome targets and annual output achieved for 2020-2021, and another column for 2021-2022. And then we had expenditure against the budget. So the 2023 DORA was used for audited financial outcomes and actual service delivery performance for the year under consideration. Next slide. So when we look at the results of the analysis, I'll mostly talk about the financial year 2021-2022, but for this particular grant, the education infrastructure grant, I'll also concentrate on the right column, which is the 2020-2021 financial year, where we kind of, as PBO, questioned the reliability of the expenditure. Because when we look at it, we highlighted it in red. First, so we need to see what was the allocated budget and what was transferred to the provinces and how much was spent by the end of the financial year. So when we look at the 2022 DORA for this conditional grant, the 2022 DORA indicates that of the 10.5 billion allocated, the full amount was transferred to provinces, of which 10.7, which is 99% of the allocated of the transferred amount, was spent at the end of the financial year. So that is the 2022 DORA. But then when we compare the same expenditure, the annual report of the department, the annual report of the department for that particular year indicates that 9.41 billion was budgeted, and but 9.46 billion was spent. So this is what the annual report is indicating. This is, you know, expenditure for and budget for the same year. The DORA is saying one thing, and then the annual report is saying another thing. Then we went further to look at the amended DORA Schedule 4, which is page 15 of Schedule 4. We find that the budget allocation was 11 billion and adjusted to 8.7 billion with a negative 2.221 billion. So now we have three sets of expenditure, budget and expenditure. So we sort of like questioned the reliability of the information, which one is the real one? Because when you come down to the information indicated in black, this relates to the information coming from the annual report to say a total of 1,931 teaching spaces were allocated. And then at the end, we see that there was an underspending in Limpopo province due to lockdown of quarter one and quarter two. This is related to the second bullet that indicates that 9.41 billion of the 41 billion, 9.46 was spent, which if you compare the two, 941 and 9.46 is greater than, which means that there was an overspending. But then at the end, we see that there was an underspending in Limpopo. So now we sort of like question the reliability of the expenditure and the information, which is which. So now when we come to financial year 2021-2022, we see that the department spent 11.5 billion, which is not reflected in the budget of the department. So that is 3% underspending. And then which a total of 2,075 teaching spaces were allocated and 163 administration were allocated and so on. So it indicates that there was an underspending happened in Limpopo province, which is the same case also in the previous financial year. There was an underspending in Limpopo province. And when you look at all this information, the 10.5 billion that we indicated in 2020, when you go to the previous year in the 2019-2020, it shows exactly the same amount. So can it be that the DORA took the amount from the previous financial 2019-2020 and brought it here to 2020-2021? So we sort of like question the reliability, because when you look at 2021-2022, it's saying that 3% underspending of the adjusted budget of 11.7 billion, which was adjusted by rollovers from the previous financial year. So which previous financial year? The one indicated by DORA of 10.5 or the one indicated by the department of 9.4? That we are not sure. So we sort of like question the reliability. Next slide. So when we go to the second grant, the school infrastructure backlog grant, we see that the department in 2020 spent 1.5 billion from the 8.1 billion, representing an 18.1% of underspending. So most of the underspending in the financial year 2020-21 is due to COVID-19 lockdown. So departments could not spend because there was disruption of construction sites by the community-based businesses and COVID-19 lockdown effect on overall businesses. So for 2021-2022, the budget spent all the allocated 2.3 billion budget for this particular grant. Next slide. So on the HIV and AIDS life skill education grant, so the department in 2020-21, the department spent 171.6 million from the allocated 187.1 million, representing a 9% underspending, with the following reasons: COVID-19, as I indicated, for the financial year 2020-21, most of the underspending is due to COVID-19 lockdown. And 2021-2022, the department spent 240 million of the transferred funds, which amounted to 242 million, representing a 1% underspending. The underspending expenditure was noted in Gauteng, Limpopo, and Northwest. So the actual output of this grant are not in line with the expected output identified for the grant. So they cannot be easily or directly meshed or compared. So this mismatch makes it difficult to measure the performance of this particular grant. Next slide. So for children, learners with severe and profound intellectual disability, the department in 2020-21 spent 217.8 million from the transferred budget of 225.8 million from the original budget of 242 million, representing a 3.7% of underspending. Lockdown also being part of the reasons why there was underspending. So there was delays also by provincial education departments in processing appointments of transversal itinerant outreach team members and replacing team members who resigned during the year. So in 2021-2022, the department spent 225 million, which is 93% of the original budget of 243 million, to provide education to learners with severe to profound intellectual disability. So the expenditure indicates a 7% underspending. So the following contributed to the underspending: delays in provincial education departments in filling vacant posts, delays in provincial education departments in supply chain management processes, and inadequate management of procurement plans by the provincial education departments. The Eastern Cape, Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape provinces have committed their funds, which they required rollovers to the next financial year. Next slide. So the Math, Science and Technology grant, or MST grant, in 2020-2021, the department spent 348.6 million from the allocated 332 million, representing a 4.5% overspending, to increase the number of learners taking MST subjects and to improve the capacity of teachers in this subject. So the overspending will be covered by the approved rollovers from the 2019-2020 financial year. So that's why the department indicated. So 8 provinces have completed their outputs for that particular financial year for the 2020-2021, with Western Cape delaying in terms of supply chain processes due to COVID-19. But for the financial year 2021-2022, the department spent 401.1 million from the allocated 412.3 million, representing a 3% in underspending. So the reason for underspending is delayed by service providers to deliver on time. However, the department annual report shows provinces committed 43 million, which changes the MST conditional grant spending to 108%. So 39 million will be rolled over to 2021-2022. So rollover will cover overspending of the grant. But now the information from the 2023 DORA differs from the information I just indicated to you. So this is also another grant where we question the reliability of the information, because the information from the DORA is supposed to be the audited information or audited outcomes, but then it indicates different amounts. Actually, when we try to trace it, the amount indicated in the DORA is the same amount for the financial year 2019-2020. So we are really not sure which is. So we question the reliability of the information also for this particular grant. Next slide. The National School Nutrition Program grant. So in terms of 2020-2021, the department spent 7.2 billion from the allocated 7.7 billion, representing 7.2% of underspending due to COVID-19 lockdown, which harmed the program. So in 21-22, the goal of the is to enhance learning capacity and improve access to education. So of the allocated 8.1 billion, the department spent 101% of the allocated budget, which means there was an overspending. Next slide. So the early childhood development grant, which used to fall under social development, is now under basic education. So we concentrate only on the information for 2021-2022, because under basic education, it only shows from this financial year. So of the total grant allocation of 1.6 billion, including the rollovers amount of 386 million, 100% was transferred to provinces. An expenditure of 1.2 billion, which is 76%, was spent by the end of the financial year. So for the 2021-2022 service delivery performance, 469,995 children benefited from this subsidy. So the ECD grant has two components, which each has detailed outputs, conditions, and responsibilities for each. So we have the infrastructure component. So from the infrastructure component of the maintenance grant allocation of 87 million, 100% was transferred to provinces, and 63 million, which is 72%, was spent by the end of the financial year. 181 ECD centers benefited from this, from the maintenance grant, and 92 were rolled over into the next financial year. And the second component, which is the subsidy component, 1 billion, which is 83% of the allocated 1.2 billion of the subsidy expansion grant, was spent by the end of the financial year, with 17% of underspending, whereby 469,995 children benefited from this subsidy. Next slide. I'll hand over to the next colleague. Thank you very much.
Just to highlight here that, as we stated earlier in our presentation, that we do not look at the quality of spend. So there are some things that the AGSA has warned us about, the deficiencies in financial performance. And so even though we are telling you that, for example, underspending might be below 2%, it does not necessarily mean that the quality of spend for the rest of the budget was good, or so forth. And so it's important that we look at the quality of spend, particularly in relation to the NDP. The AGSA has also reported that there's unreliable reporting of data and information, and there isn't adequate performance information systems in place. There are other issues that have been raised, for example, prolonged investigations or delays by public bodies, poor build quality infrastructure, particularly this is with regards to basic education, poor commissioning of projects, planning, and so forth. So there's a gap between, you know, the planning and the execution, in addition to the budgeting framework. The financial health of the sector has been under immense pressure for years, and as we've raised before, even in the BSD, which is the question of the adequacy of the budgets themselves, to be able to ensure that there's implementation on a broader scale. And so, yeah, they've raised some of the issues that have emerged. I won't read through all of them, but the provincial health and education departments are responsible for 2.83 billion out of 3.21 billion in unauthorized expenditure. So there's significant amount of unauthorized expenditure coming from this particular sector. And I won't read the last point, but I think members can appreciate that we need to think about financial management more broadly and accounting.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Chair, I think we're going to draw it close now. I think I won't go back through all the conclusions, but I think the message that we're trying to send out here, I'm struggling now with my presentation. Okay. Next slide. On the conclusion, Chair and members and colleagues, I think the message we're sending out here, what we're emphasizing, the importance of social grants really playing very important a role as a police government policy to deal with some of the social economic issues, and there has to be some consideration in regards to the budget allocation to, in this regard. But I think we're concerned that there has been a lot of underspending over years, despite how much need that takes place, and the emphasis around the provinces that has continued to underspend quite a lot. But I think the broader issue here is also that the underspend cannot really be used as a way to reduce budget within these sectors spending. Social special relief grant as well during COVID-19 was an important intervention. But our concern is that what I call teething problems of this grant have really costed many deserving households for getting funding and support that they require so greatly. Next slide, Busi. And lastly, under education, we've seen that over the 10-year horizon of our study that there's been, on average, underspending at the national level, but also at the provinces as well, there's been a lot of underspending more so within areas. And that also, raised concerns looking at how much gains have been made in developing in education outcomes over time. And I think we're concerned that we see over time there's been decline in allocation in this particular in the sector as well. And I think in conclusion, Chair, members and colleagues, that in our view, some of the reasons of underspending these sectors, most of them can be addressed really, and some of them are very systematic. And I think we want to really plead that addressing these issues and also allocating budget cannot be used as a way to whip sectors for realizing the development outcome in this regard. I just have left it there, Chair, and thank you so much, members, for the opportunity in this regard. Thank you so much. We know it's very late, but we really appreciate for the opportunity. We'll wait for the questions.
Thank you, Tim PBO. Thank you very much. The DG from Department of Basic Education, I'm informed, is here on the platform. You are welcome, sir. We appreciate your availability, and that is going to have an impact on the questions or confusion that we need to be clarified by your good source. Having said that, honorable members, let me give you an opportunity, raise your hand to indicate. Secretary will help me. I see Honorable Ryder, Honorable Muletsani, Honorable Detroit. Those are the only hands so far.
And Honorable Moss.
Oh, Honorable Linda Moss. Thank you, Honorable Members. In that order, let's start with Honorable Ryder.
Good evening, Chairperson. Thank you very much. And good evening to all of the colleagues online. Thank you very much for the presentation. And before I get into the detail, I'd just like to acknowledge the fact that I think that this is great work. I know it's an initiative from our secretariat, from the outcomes of our committee deliberations, and from PBO. So to all of the players that got us here tonight to discuss this matter, I just want to say thank you. It's us doing the work that we're supposed to be doing, and I'm glad we are here. Thank you for that. Good work that's gone into this presentation, and I have a lot to say, Chair, but I'll try and keep it short. So the first question I have just relates to social development and the analysis that only went until 2021, and yet others included 21, 22. So perhaps that is just the one small little elephant in the room that I'd like to ask a question about. And I think certainly we can all agree that 2021 was a fairly odd year in terms of what went on worldwide. And perhaps there can be some forgiveness for certain grants, conditional grants that were not paid out during the 2021 financial year. However, that there are other conditional grants that really needed to be paid out during that year as people felt real hardship. And I think that there needs to be some reasonably good drawing of the line against, you know, what couldn't be spent. Because, of course, I think we saw a shutdown of the construction sector, for example, through large parts of 2020, 2021. And so construction, big construction projects couldn't go ahead. But where it comes down to feeding people and getting food into the mouths of people during that period when many people were not earning an income, I think those are the grants we wanted spent. So I do think that there needs to be a differentiation between the grants as we become critical of underspending, particularly in that year. However, Chairperson, I do think that you know, what happened that year might be an anomaly, and there are certain obvious places where, you know, expenditure has always been going pretty much on track, but as people felt the impact of the lockdowns towards the end of the 2019-20 financial year, you know, we all know that much grant spending, much spending happens in the last kind of 3 months of a financial year. So there was a small impact then, and obviously in the subsequent financial year, I think that we need to look through that lens and see exactly what happened there. But realistically, the expenditure of some of those grants is most important through that time. So yeah, getting on to the rest of the presentation, I think cost of living crisis, the fact that PBO has highlighted this, I welcome that tremendously. And I do think we need to acknowledge that as a committee, that there is a cost of living crisis, that people are reliant on grants more and more. And this is a problem. And I think PBO made the point that the South Africa has the most progressive system of grants in the world. And there's something positive. Unfortunately, what we don't have is a system which is progressive enough that it enables people to receive a grant for a period of time, and then they work their way out of the difficulties that they find. So what is the effectiveness of the grants that we have. So, and you know, I mean, we've seen images of people with hands full of SASSA cards. People who shouldn't have hands full of SASSA cards, drawing money when the time comes because they happen to be well connected and so on. So I think the efficacy of our grants also is something that we need to really have a look at before we pat ourselves on the back about how good our system is. Though the ideology or the idea behind it might be good, the actual implementation, as usual, leaves quite a lot to be desired. The fact is, and I'm going to focus a little bit on Gauteng for a little while, if I may. Obviously, that's my home province, and that's who's put me here. But we've had consistent underspending for 7 years in Gauteng on things like the dignity packs and school uniform grants. So consistent underspending for 7 years. Now, you know, where you've had 1 year where there's been a bit of a blip, as I say, it might be understandable, but 7 years of underspending shows a massive problem. And the reality is that, I mean, there was a report delivered to the committee, the oversight committee in Gauteng last week, which indicated that underspending is likely to happen on those two grants again this year. And it just shows that there's a real problem. There's a systemic problem. If there's a consistent inability to spend the money. Now, some of the reasons listed through the presentation were, you know, issues like supply chain or vacancies, post vacancies, etc. Now, you know, I can understand if there's a problem, there's a 1 year hiccup with supply chain or there's a vacant post or something, you know, it causes a problem for 1 year. But to have 7 consecutive years of underspending points to a much deeper problem. What we also found in Gauteng this year was the NPO funding, which became a big issue, as there were cuts made in April. Look, those cuts have been reversed subsequently, following tremendous pressure that was put on provincial government. But the cutting of grant funding to the NPOs was seriously alarming, and happened at short notice, which makes it really difficult for NPOs, for people out there that are doing public good, to deliver their services consistently. And even though these things have been reversed, not all of that money has been reversed back in. So I believe there's an amount of about 258 million rand, which has not yet been reallocated back where it should be. So you've got a whole bunch of NPOs. I think there's over 170 NPOs that are still unfunded. And the desktop allocations that are happening are just not having the desired impact that we really need to see, because you know, realistically, desktop reallocations don't allow for things like, you know, where the people are as to where the services or the NPO is. So you might close down one NPO and say no, but the people can go to the other one. But the reality is, you know, if there's a 100-120 kilometer difference between the two positions, it creates real on the ground concerns. And I think that this was acknowledged by PBO in what they were saying, is that the qualitative use of the grant funding is something that they haven't been able to assess. And perhaps I can pick up on that now and just say, you know, the fact that the impact of these and the performance on these targets is something that PBO wasn't able to comment on, actually calls into question the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. You know, DPME, there's an M and E at the end of that. And you know, are they really doing their work? Perhaps we need to chat to them and hear from them what their ideas are in terms of what's happening with grant funding. Last two, Chair, I note your camera. Thank you. The big concern for me was the issue around the lack of reliability on the information that we have, that Ms. Sekatani highlighted with the education infrastructure grant and then later in the presentation as well, where the fact is that we actually almost appears that we don't know
what was spent. So we've got an annual report saying one thing, but we've got DORA saying something else, and there's a disconnect. And this is something that I do believe we need to follow up on. Perhaps we can get Treasury to guide us a little bit and answer some of those questions. And Ms. Sekatani obviously went through those quite quickly. And, you know, she was referring to numbers and we were dashing our eyes across the page to see which numbers she was talking about. But I think it's something that needs to be unpacked really slowly to understand why an annual report doesn't reflect the numbers that are quoted in the Division of Revenue or even in the adjustment budget, Division of Revenue. Excuse me. So I do think that is something that we really need to consider. Chair, thank you very much. I note you tapping your watch. I appreciate the opportunity, and again, well done. Thanks for the presentation.
No problem, Honourable Ryder. I think, like you said, if you as members, you still have the energy to can engage on this important presentations, it's welcome. It's really welcome and appreciated because we are saying we can't just allocate money and not follow money, and this is what we are doing. And with the assistance of the Parliamentary Budget Office, I don't know if I have welcomed DG from education, but I hope I've done that. And you were able to talk to issues that also affect the Department of Basic Education, also in your provinces and national department. I will now request the Honourable Ntate Moletsane to speak to the issues that he wants to raise. Ntate Moletsane?
Thank you and good evening, Chairperson. Good evening to colleagues, PBO. Good evening to everyone who is a part of this meeting. Chairperson, my first question I would like to ask the PBO in terms of the follow-up research that they have done on the 2021-2022 to the Department of Social Development, whether there is an improvement in terms of filling in the posts, the vacant posts that were not filled in. My second question it's about the issue of the underspending. I hope we understand that underspending, it denies the people of South Africa service delivery. Now, I just want to find out from the PBO that what kind of an advice they can give to the Department of Social Development to eradicate all the things that are contributing to underspending as a remedy so that they avoid underspending. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ntate Moletsane. I will now request Honorable Detroit to engage on the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Detroit. The platform is yours.
And thank you to PBO for this presentation. There's a lot to chew on, and I think that we will need to spend more time on the information that was provided, but thank you for the effort that you put in. Chair, I will be brief. I noted in the presentation that not all the provinces were mentioned with regards to under and overspending. And my concern specifically is the Northwest Province, which has a historical tendency to underspend in most of its departments. I mean, that's one of the reasons why it was placed under administration initially. Can you please be provided with a summary of the spending trends of the Northwest Province at a later stage? It doesn't have to be on an official basis, but if it could just maybe be communicated to us, I would really appreciate that, please. And then also, if we could be informed with regards to the SRB grant, obviously that is not something that will be paid out for a long time to come. Is there something that will maybe replace this? And what does the PBO see? What is the future of a social grant like the SRD grant? Seeing that the Minister of Finance indicated in the news in the past 2 weeks that South Africa's money is drying up and we don't have sufficient funds anymore to tend to all the responsibilities that we currently have in the country. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've received numerous telephone calls from individuals that is basically standing in the corner and they do not know what to expect if Treasury is definitely in a position where they can tend to all the things that they need to tend to and if there's sufficient funds available. We do not know what the collection status of SARS is at this stage, but maybe you have received information that you could maybe share with the committee. If that is the case, it would be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Du Toit. I now request Honourable Moss to engage with the presentation. Honourable Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening, everyone. Chairperson, my concern is for the issue of the need of 55 social workers to do the social service development work of the department. This issue is being brought under our attention when I was to work for the social development in those years, since 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019. And still, the issue is still there. DSD still needs social workers while there's underspending. Only them can tell us when can they address this, or how will they address this matter. Because every year we pass the budget and still we're getting a report of underspending. We appreciate the work they've done, but only them can advise us how can they address that issue. Secondly, on the issue, on all the issues they highlight why they underspend, can they tell us how will they address the issue of procurement, the issue of people not submitting their invoices in time or the invoices not be paid in time to the service providers and so forth and so forth. Only they can tell us. We can debate this thing for the whole night, but I strongly believe only them can tell us how can you address the matter or the matters that is in the report. Thirdly, the person on the issue of, yeah, also of this thing of what happened in 2020 and 2021, it was very hard years for us on the issue of COVID. Yes, a lot of people did struggle in not getting their grants, or they even sitting in long lines waiting to be assisting by SASSA on those times. But some people didn't get their grants. So what will we do as South Africans, as politicians, to let we make sure that this issue be addressed. Even as I speak today, some of people didn't even pay their social grants at the post office, not even at the banks, not even at the pay points. They didn't pay their social grants. I'm talking here while I'm staying in the Western Cape. And all the reports must be highlighted in this presentation. The Western Cape's name is always be there. And I want to really say, person, this issue must be addressed once and for all, as our people are already suffering because they are very poor, and they are the poorest of the poor paying this grant. The last point I want to raise, say, person, was on the issue of HIV and AIDS life skills education grant was spent 1% underspending in Gauteng, Limpopo, and the Northwest. My question will be, why is there underspend of 1% in the three provinces today? In this thing of rollovers, luckily we received today a training in the NCOP. And the chief was saying the departments must stop have this thing of rollovers and rollovers. So thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Moss. Is there any other hand, Secretariat?
No, Chairperson, those are the only hands that has been raised so far. Oh, there's one, Honorable Robert McDonald. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable McDonald, McDee.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm the head of social development for the Western Cape. Just needed to flag for the committee the figures for underspending for the Western Cape for the financial year.
Sorry, just a moment. My apologies, Mr. McDonald. You are not a member of the portfolio committee. You are an official within the department.
Yes, that is correct. I just wanted to correct the information presented there because they presented incorrect figures for Western Cape before we get more questions on it, because I think I've heard questions coming, but the information is actually very incorrect. So I just wanted to alert the committee to that.
The sequence that we are following, sir, you will get an opportunity to make those corrections when we give the officials or the departments to speak to the issues which have been raised. So we will, as members, raise issues as we understand them, and then thereafter, I will give you an opportunity to speak to them or make corrections. Just hold on, and please. Remind me, Lubabalo, sure. Note Mr. McDonald for thank him you, to sir. Speak when we get there. Let me start by, appreciating the good work done by PBO. I will request that the PBO colleagues, if you have not seen the message from Honorable Ryder, please read it on the chat group. But what I want to appreciate and congratulate you is the members that you have recruited in your team. Very vibrant young women. I'm not trying to be discriminative in terms of sexual orientation or whatever, but then or in gender, I just want to say that this is one thing that I'm passionate about. And Asmapule, well done. Dr. Janjis and the team, well done. And thank you to keep up doing the good work and encourage our young graduates to come and serve the people of South Africa, the citizens of South Africa. I was going to request, I don't know, Lubabalo, if you will be able to, Mr. Notata, to help me. I want to speak to issues that have attracted my attention in as far as your presentations are concerned on different slides. In your introductory or when you started talking, you spoke or you highlighted on the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Gauteng for the 2021-22. Also the 2022 SRD, I think other members have spoken to that. They have caught my eyes. But can we go to slide 17? If possible, please.
But can you go to slide?
Yeah, what caught me here is the trend. I know Honorable Ryder and Honorable Detroit have spoken about this trend in as far as the underspending is concerned. I understand that. But I want to re-emphasize this because we do take resolutions. We make as the committee, select committee on appropriations, we discuss and make recommendations to the House. And in our recommendations, we encourage you as departments, national, your entities, and your counterparts in the provinces to have engagements so that you can come up with solutions or roadmaps on how to attend or to eradicate those challenges that you're facing. But if there's continuous underspending on annual basis, it becomes a problem to us as an oversight body, more especially as appropriations, because you will come to us, you will go to the House and provinces and complain that you are not happy with the funds that are being that are allocated to you. How are we going to be convinced if there's a continuous underspending? How are we going to motivate? Because we don't just we don't just allocate money for the sake of you having money. It starts with your existence. Your existence, you exist because you need to give service to the needy. Hence, the national department will give a money to you. And on the presentations, I think slide 29. While you're going to slide 29, PBO in their presentation, and I share that with them, they are concerned about the reasons behind the underspending. It can't be accepted. The conditional grants on this slide, on slide 29, the underspending by Department of Education. I hear what you're saying here. The early child development grant and all that. When we do division of revenue, we get all sorts of criticism. We get good inputs, commitments and all that. And if we cannot spend this money, you know, if the citizens are not getting their services because there is no money, it's something else. But what we cannot accept is that the citizens are not getting services because money is not there. We are told about the red tape, we are told about the transfers and all other logistics. And these things are written. And when you know your cycle, your budget cycles, your expenditure. But if PBO is convinced about the rollovers, it's something else. It's something else if you are a convinced PBO. But I have a question. We can move from this slide to slide 35. I want to this thing of medical. Let's leave it that one because it's something that we have that and we have resolved on it in the NCOP. So we'll have to come back as a select committee to make a follow up and track on it in. Because we have put time frames so that you have a program of action as to when are you expected to attend to the issues that we are raising. On slide 29, the same thing on the department. Oh, did I say? Oh, there's an issue that has been raised about the reprioritization as one of the reasons. And I think the PFMA is very clear in terms of what needs to happen. But I think I have some extent of expectation from PBO as a body that is responsible to assist us in terms of interventions and making sure that we intervene correctly and we oversight over this department or institutions correctly. So if a reason is given that there's an under expenditure because of these reasons, where do these priorities come from to can make you to reprioritize? Some of the issues, one might think that we are overstepping as the appropriations, because there are sector departments that are specifically responsible who are supposed to deal with this department. So the major question that I'm having, PBO, because according to me, which is subject to correction, engagement with most of the colleagues, is that you can only engage or can only participate or advise in the budgeting processes or finance issues. But in cases, you raise policy matters which need the sector committee, whether select committee or a portfolio committee, to invite you, or maybe you should request to engage with them and raise these issues so that they can also hold these departments accountable. That is my major question among others. My major concern among others. On slide 35, line 3, there's this issue of we are on 35.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. This advocacy on social mobilization activities that target parents and school community members, among other issues, and you go down to say some outputs targets were revised to accommodate the COVID-19 response and budget adjustment. So when you go to 2021-22, there are provinces there. Honorable Tutoitu have raised the issue of Northwest. It is indicated there, but at the side of education on HIV and AIDS life skills. Honorable Ryder, you have raised the issue of how there it is there. But Limpopo also is there. And I've seen somewhere, I think it's DST, where Mpumalanga is also raised. Eastern Cape is also raised. But we cannot say because we have raised these few departments, it means there is no problem in all these provinces. But I think the social cluster as a committee, I'm selling this idea to the members of the committee to say that as a committee we need to sell this idea to the authority of the NSOP or among the reports. You can agree or disagree with me that let the social cluster deal with this report because it's very important. It's actually doing the work that we are supposed to be doing. And one has to appreciate and utilize this information to the benefit of the South African and not for our individual gains. I don't know if it's a coincidence or it's a lack that this morning we had an engagement as an NCOP during question answer session where we had Minister Zulu. And most of the issues here, the issues of the under expenditure, the issues that members were dissatisfied about were raised, answers were given, commitment were made. But I think we are advantaged that before coming to this meeting, we had an engagement with the Minister of Social Development. But that does not stop us from taking this matter up. I will be happy and appreciate where PDO go to the department, I mean the sector committees, to make these presentations also and let those departments, I mean sector committees, engage with what you have because this information is very rich and it can only help the people responsible. Whether at the political level, at the management level, and also the citizens, the beneficiaries who are supposed to be benefiting on this issue. You know, when Ms. Sibeko made her last part of the presentation, she said something about the AG. And it's not for the first time it was said. One of the presenters also spoke about it. We have an upcoming meeting with the AG, which has long been planned. But you are saying you were warned. And we are now going to the end of the term of his sixth parliament. And we are still struggling with this thing, and the AG is seeing these things. And one thing that comes to my mind is, was there an engagement with the AG? Was there a remedial action that departments were able to put forward to commit to say, this is how we are going to respond to these issues as detected them. We should not wait for the last minutes to do that. So those are the issues that I wanted to raise, and majority of the issues, honorable members from the committee, they have spoken to them. I just didn't want to repeat them, but those others that I have raised, I feel they needed to be raised as they were not raised. I will now hand over to, before PBO, I will do it vice versa. Before PBO, I will request Department of Social Development, and after Department of Social Development, then we'll go to Department of Education for responses, and thereafter we can Maybe let me start with Mekti, who is Fani'i?
Yes, that's Robert MacDonald, Head of Social Development from the Western
Cape. You want to be first? Oh, yes, I wanted to start with you, actually, before the other colleagues come in.
Okay, you can come in. Thank you very much, Chair. No, it's just a correction issue. The underspend recorded for social development of the Western Cape on the year 2021 is incorrect. I think it's slide 17. They've stated there 400 million. It's actually 20 million. So the underspend is 0.7%, not 15% as recorded there.
Okay.
That's an important correction, I think, just in terms of making sure the report is accurate for the members. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. DSD.
Good evening, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Fani Estrosen. I'm the Acting CFO for Social Development.
If you can, sir, if possible, please, we will appreciate that you open your video so that we can see you because, the meeting is live. Please, if you can, just do that.
Can you see me? There we go. As I said, good evening.
Yes, we can see you.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, thank you very much. I'm the Acting CFO for Social Development, Fani Estrosen. The Acting DJ has requested me to apologise. He has left. He has gone to the Minister as part of the oral replies. So let me just start, Honourable Chairperson, in terms of some of the responses that I want to feedback to the committee and also to the PBO. Let me just put the context of underspending just in some perspective. Of the 95 or 99% budget that we currently have for our department, that's been controlled actually by Cabinet and the National Treasury. The amount that we got for the social grants on an annual basis is an amount that's been exclusively appropriated in Cabinet. So as a department, we don't have any rights to reutilize that funding for anything else. Only Cabinet can do that. And that's why you could see whatever remains unspent at the end of the financial year has to go back to the revenue in terms of this. So it makes us put us in a very difficult position currently to ask for that money to reutilize it for other services because we are underfunded as a social sector. So of that huge allocation that we have for the department, only 1 billion of that goes to operational costs of which we have to fund our compensation of employees and our goods and services. There also goes a huge amount to a SASSA administration of 7 billion where they will utilize that funding as the agency, but also to pay the social grant. So we have very little room in terms of trying to shift our money around, whatever our savings that we have for the financial year. In the only two financial years, we had some significant underspending on our goods and services. Now, in those specific, some of the specific years, the prior three financial years, we received additional allocation. There was a presidential instruction to focus on GBV. And therefore, we got 90 million only in the adjusted estimates process, which was September, October. And then we had 4 or 5 months to do the implementation. And that's why some of the reasons that you see there for procurement, it's very difficult to disperse 90 million in a period of 9 months, 4 months. And then we had to ask for rollovers, and that was only spent in the year after that. I'm going to ask the CEO of SASSA to respond to some of the questions related to the grants. You've mentioned that there was issues when we had COVID, and my recollection is that all grants were paid, even in the COVID period. We received additional funding for the SRD, which started 1 April 2021. Correct, 2021. So there was additional funding that received for the SRD, but I think the CEO of SASSA can speak to some of these things, especially on the issues that was raised in terms of the SRD and the payment of grants. and also the areas related to the COVID period. Chairperson, I don't want to belabor further the point, but I just wanted to give some perspective on the underspending that we are, and our hands are tied in terms of some of the allowable shift that we are allowed to make, but for the underspending on social grants, we're not allowed to touch in terms of this. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Who did you request to speak after you?
Chairperson, the CEO of SASSA, Mrs. Totsi Matamela. She's also online. Thank you.
Good afternoon through you, Chair, and to the members. A very good evening to you all. Chair, I thought I should just clarify first with regards to the SRD, which is the normal SRD grant that we normally do prior to the existence of the three.
My audio is not working. Yeah.
Who's that? Can you mute, please? There's someone on the platform. The only person who can unmute his or her mic is the person who's speaking. Continue.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. At the time when COVID started, we needed to make sure that we direct all our efforts to the SRD 350 that started at that time. And as a result, the normal SRD grant that we do, we redirected our efforts to making sure that we're able to do that, because we needed to make sure that we have a system that existed that we had to develop from scratch, but over and above that, we needed to make sure that the payment happens. And this is a system that we didn't have prior to that. That's why we then redirected to that. On the general understanding on SRD in recent years, what we need to note, Chair, is that there's been a start and stop in terms of us doing the SRD 350, which continued to create a lot of challenges for us in terms of making sure that the system is stabilized and that we're able to do what we need to do. Because each time there was a change, it therefore meant that we need to restart with regards to establishing the system. But over and above that, we needed to ensure that we recontract with all the other stakeholders that we work with in the value chain, because we work with banks, we work with all other institutions that actually provide support for us, and it does become difficult once we start and stop in terms of ensuring that that is done properly. So those are the issues that I thought I needed to highlight, Chair, and will ask Brenton to add if there's any other additional issues that I've left out, but I thought it was key to highlight that. Thank you very much, Chair. Brenton?
Good evening, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, CEOs and colleagues. My apologies.
Please open your video if possible.
Chair, my video is on. I can see myself on the screen. I'm not sure if others can see me. I know my data connection is
on.
Okay.
I see you.
May I proceed?
Yes, you can proceed. You can see you now.
My apologies. My light is a bit dim because I've got busy load shedding, so I've just got battery lights on at the moment. So yes, I think the CL covered the biggest challenge we had was the fluctuations of the SRD. So our biggest underspending has come on the SRD grant. All our other grants we have spent within the sort of benchmark levels that we expect to spend within. So spending even through the COVID period has been within those levels that we sort of give ourselves, the parameters that we give ourselves. The COVID SRD grant has been a very difficult grant. It's a completely new grant that was implemented by government in 2020. And just to give a sense, for example, if you look at any of the other grants that were implemented, they were implemented slowly over a period of time. We take the only one that our democratic government has implemented is the CSG, which we implemented in 1998, and that grew over a period of 15 years to 7.2 million clients. If you look at the SRD grant, this one went in a 3 months to 6 million clients in, and, you know, at one point it was at 13 million clients, then it came down to 6 million clients again, then it was stopped, it was zero, then it went up to 10 million clients, and only in, I would say from last year has it again come down to about 8 million clients, and we're now sort of on a more flat or stable trajectory where we, on average, we're sort of growing slowly like we did in the past, which is a lot more stable. So I think a lot of the underspending and overspending on the SRD grant is just largely because we implemented something under emergency conditions. We went very broad, very generous in terms of the qualifying criteria, then realized that, you know, this is just going to be too expensive for government. We had to then claw it back with some more tighter regulations, limit the qualifying criteria. That was a little bit over-stringent. We had to then relax it again. And so that does create a little bit of havoc on our budgets. But I think since 2022, we have seen stability in that grant, and we're not seeing those big, huge swings on the numbers anymore. And it is beginning to settle at around about 8 million, which is more or less our narrow definition for unemployment. But I'm not saying that the two are explicitly linked, because we don't necessarily, it's not necessarily an unemployment grant. Then on the issues around the challenges, and I think it's worth mention, it's important to mention that we are experiencing challenges with our banking partner, the Post Bank, and that in the last year, and again in the last 2 days, these have surfaced again. But early on in the year, when we ceded our contract from the South African Post Office to the Post Bank, when they took over that contract, there was a lot of challenges around that, and we had a lot of people not being able to withdraw their money from their account. So from SASSA's side, we've transferred the money. The money is in the bank account of the client, but a lot of times when the client goes and tries to withdraw the money at an ATM, there were some technological failures on the Post Bank side that resulted in the money not being able to be withdrawn. That has been largely remedied around February, March this year, and things have been stable in that environment until today. And so again, very disappointing yesterday, when a large portion of our older persons were unable to access their benefits. The Post Bank has given us the assurance that this afternoon that the technical issues have been fixed. There is still a challenge around reversing people's money, because when you withdraw the money and it fails, it still goes off your account, and all of that has to then be reversed. And they have assured us that by the end of today, tonight, that those reversals will be done, and hopefully when the child support grant payments start tomorrow, things will be running smoothly. But again, that was very, very, very disheartening that we see this challenge that we thought was, you know, remedied a couple of months ago is reappearing again in this space. But that does also then force us as SASSA to begin to reconsider, you know, how we partner with various service providers and banks in this space as well. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. We are done with the DSD now. We can request the team basic education. Basic education, DG, are you still on the platform? Or he has been kicked out?
Good evening, Chair. My profuse apologies. I'm trying to get my... I hope you can see me, Chair, although it's a bit dark.
We can see you next day. Continue.
Chair, thank you very much for the privilege. If you allow me to just close my camera. Thank you very much for the privilege, Chair. I also want to join you in applauding the team that has shared their comprehensive report with us. Just a few points that I want to make. I came at the tail end, but I managed to capture a number of valuable points from the presentation. The first one is that we have strengthened our monitoring over provinces. We equally concerned about areas of under expenditure. I want to echo your sentiments. More often than none, it's not the issue of the availability of money, but it's our own systems and processes that actually delay delivery that would benefit the citizenry of the country. And we've managed to really improve in some of the areas. Infrastructure is one of them. Historically, it's been an area where we were not spending as expected. We have also been advised and encouraged by oversight structures of Parliament, the Select Committee, as well as the Portfolio Committee, that we also need to pay attention to issues of the quality of work and services that we receive, which is areas that we've started to pay attention to. So as you might have observed, our expenditure in infrastructure has improved tremendously over the years. This is attributable to the fact that we have more than doubled our monitoring, and it has paid off, and everybody seemed to accept the fact that our monitoring seems to be doing work. I also spend most of the time out in the fields than in the office. I started with spending only one day in the office. At times, I spend the whole week out in the areas where the projects have been rolled out. And that has started to pay off quite a lot. When it comes to other grants such as HIV and AIDS, medicine and technology and others, we've also strengthened our monitoring there. But again, as the report indicated, there are still internal problems within provinces, either delays in supply chain and so on. And our attitude as a national department is that if it's supply chain within the department, then there are weaknesses within the department, and the department has to sort that out so that that gets out of the way of getting services delivered to our communities. And the last point is around early childhood development. As the report correctly indicated, we just had 1 year of ECD, which is the last financial year. This is the second year. We received ECD 1st of April last year, 2022. So essentially, it was a year where the system was getting used to the grant, and our performance was not good at all. But we have seen a very good uptake this financial year, where there's been a tremendous improvement in most of the provinces, and that's what we'd like to see throughout. The very last point is that, as you correctly, given a way forward in this regard, that this report must go to oversight structures of Parliament to hold us accountable. We will go through the report with the team, and I suppose a very good opportunity would be when we deal with our annual reports, then such a report also could come in so that we are able to give answers to oversight structures of Parliament. Otherwise, thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you to the team that has put this report together. Thank you, Chair.
Special DG, thank you for availing yourself, even though we have just hijacked you, but it's understandable. Thank you so much. And I hope that most of our technocrats can have that understanding. It only pays off, unlike sitting in the office wanting to enjoy the aircon and do the paperwork or the computer or whatever, and you think things will happen. And you'll get reports, you get consultants, which will last reply to you, give you information that projects have been done for you to make payments. You'll approve payments of some things that you don't know. I'm talking from experience, and having worked with people like you, it helped who are hands-on and who would like to get their hands dirty. And I hope your colleagues and whoever you're working with can appreciate that and join you in making sure that they're on the ground. Thank you very much. People, over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair, and honorable members. And thank you so much once more. And I say, Chair, that the way you've dealt it this time around, having the department is very, very good, because, you know, I think it was a very good strategy in bringing everybody on board. Thank you so much for that. And then we really thank also the questions from the members and also the words of encouragement for the PBO team work hard to really support this important house in this regard. I'll touch some of the few pointers, and then I'll give the team to talk on specific points, and then we won't take long, Chair, because we realize it's a bit late on the day. I think one of the points, certainly we would be happy to go to the sector committees to deal with some of the matters, and we always try to share the reports with the sectors as well, and we're happy to attend the engagements in this regard. The issue around other provinces, I think the picture is quite similar around broadly. So our methodology was just try to cover all the provinces, not to be more broadly inclusive, cover provinces, the urban area, and also rural area anyway. But I think generally the picture is quite similar, but we can provide more substantive analysis. But also we use different methods where we covered other provinces under conditional grants. We didn't cover in other areas and so on, but we can provide more substantive. I know that the issue around Northwest is one area as well. I think the questions around, some of the issues that needs to be done to address some of the issues. There's probably a lot of, but I think maybe one of the points that we do in our report, we do emphasize that, there has to be acknowledgement that there can never be an absolute complete spending. When you also look at literature, there's always a level of underspending inherently related to the sector, but inherently related to a particular time period and so on, but there'll always be a bit of underspending. But I think what becomes important is the system, financial management system itself, and I've noted a colleague, some commented that having capability to allow the money moved around in a way that it can, when you take example, social development, if you have a need for social workers and you have money put in a particular pot, how are you able to move that around to make sure that you solve another problem, you don't have the money underspent, whereas you have the need on the other side, which is a very, very important consideration for our discussion in this regard. So that, for me, would also be one of the areas to say how you are able to shift the money around in a more sound and more proper way without leading to underspending. The issue of feeling of vacancies, particularly in the strategic roles, providing leadership stability in departments and entities, it becomes very important, because without having those strategic roles, your heads, your financial officers and technical directors and so on, without having those stability, it does impact on the ability of the entity for the department to actually implement the performance strategy they put out. So I think when I emphasize that as one of the areas that can lead up to other areas being addressed, because having leadership stability is able to filter down to other sectors within the entity or in the sector. That's also another consideration in this regard. The point around the SRD, SRD was really meant for a particular purpose. It was meant during the time of COVID-19 in particular. But I think we've seen there has been studies in our presentation earlier in the year. We did show that there are studies that shows how this has been very effective. In our conclusion slide, we do emphasize the importance of recognizing the social grants as very important policy tools that government has used to support households, support low-income households, support the poor. It's a very important tool. And one of the points we said last year, and I remember saying that in a very passionate voice was that there has to be some realization that part of this will have to be with us permanently. When you look at our literature, but also other countries who are in a better position, social grants part of government tools on dealing with social economic issues, including unemployment, poverty in their countries. And we've seen in our case, South Africa is also, we have got a clear sign that shows that that has worked a lot of times. I think for me, the challenge, my concerns that, and also in the budget in the instances, we often see this be seen as a cost by bearing to the budget. And it's a worry issue. Because our sense is that when you look at, there's various models that we've seen, we're currently modeling it ourselves here in PVO, where you see that it has a like impact of influencing your economic development, your economic growth, but also dealing with other macroeconomic issues. If really it's well targeted, if spending particularly, you are more likely to see this money being spent on the economy, and that creating more revenue for government, but also creating dealing with the issues of poverty, which again it deals with issues of healthcare. But some of the health diseases that we see, it's because of lack of proper nutrition and lack of well-fed. So if you deal with that, you are supporting households to have food, proper food in the table. You are dealing with your economic growth, and that also encourage sectors. My load shedding hit me. I'm glad I'm using the phone. So you like to deal with a lot of economic issues, economic development matters, at the same time addressing social economic issues. And I think in our previous presentation, our reports, we've always said that social support.
Sorry, Dr. Chanchis, I'm sorry, my apologies. Can I request a meeting that if I'm unable, I'm kicked out, I can be kicked out at any time now. Please let Honorable Moss continue with the meeting, but I'll try to connect with my phone. You can continue, sir.
Thank you so much, man. So sorry, I was also a visionary to use the phone instead of the computer. So I think just including on this issue of thinking about the support for households, social grants or income support, it has to be seen as part of economic policy of our country going forward, and not be seen as a burden to the budget or seen as a burden to spending. It has to be seen in dealing with some social economic issues, but also as part of support industries. You know, industrialization, income support, households should be seen as part of that in this regard. I think let me stop there because now I see the light. Let me give the team to speak on specific issues. One of the issues that I want you to start with, colleagues, is the issue of the incorrect amount that was raised by Mr. McDonald, and then you can quickly rush with other issues. Bosi, do you want to start? Thank you so much, Chair and members. Bosi, do you want to start?
Thank you. Thank you for that opportunity. And we'll certainly check the numbers and, of course, revert back to you with regards to that. I think that would be the best way to go forward, given the number of Excel sheets that we have to look through. But I wanted to add on to what our director has just been talking about, which is really about the adequacy of the budget. And Honorable Ryder was, questioning this question or asking this question about, it's not enough in a way, so to speak. And I'm sorry I'm paraphrasing in this very big way, but to say that one of our key arguments is really to say that DSD is able to spend, right? The underspending is low. So therefore DSD is able to spend. And for us, the SRD part, besides the new program, which would obviously potentially result in underspend for us, one of the key arguments is that inadequate budget allocation has driven underspend. So actually the argument we're making here is that, if you allocate the adequate budget, then we might have not seen as much underspend as we did. Because of course, when the criteria changed, and of course DSD is well aware of this, when the criteria changed, it meant that adjusting to the system again. And also in terms of the stop-start manner, part of our PBO position generally has always been, we need to take this approach that, we need to invest, and this is what also our director has been talking about, seeing this as an investment in the people and thinking about the regenerative, relationship between expenditure and revenue and the broader fiscal framework and so forth. So the stop and start nature in itself was problematic because the withdrawals of the SRD grant in the initial phase were premature because we were still in an ongoing crisis in itself. And also, as we note in our the reasons for underspend, that new projects tend to be one of the avenues in which there's underspend. There was a question about why we chose up to 2021. So that was really a function of what was the period we could get audited outcomes for. So we did this project early in the year. This was before budget 2023. And so the audited outcomes were basically, we had to pick a period in which we knew would get the audited outcomes. And so what you'll find in our presentation is that there are multiple methodologies. There's a different methodology for assessing the underspend, which is the adjusted budgets versus the audited outcomes. And there's a different methodology on our conditional grants. So just to draw that attention and also say for the SRD analysis, for example, it was done pre the MCPP. Is, and so we're applying different methods of analysis. And so because we're in different teams and there's different methodological approaches, that's why you find that that particular analysis does not go up to 2022, 23. But of course, it could be expanded and once the audited outcomes do come out. I think the question about Gauteng, you know, it is very, so one of the things we acknowledge in our papers about understanding is this idea that as much as there are systematic, we were trying to draw out the systematic issues. So what would be the go-to reasons that are common amongst provinces? But of course, we also acknowledge that each province has a unique reason for why there's consistent understand. And also just to also amplify one of our limitations, which is that if a province does not explicitly write about understanding the annual report, we are unable to track the reasons for why. So one of our limitations was that we were relying on the annual reports of departments to be able to give the reasons to why there's underspend. So in the Gauteng case, the question would be, you know, to what extent are the reports, annual reports, explicit in the reasons for underspend, and to kind of systematically track that. I think in terms of have we followed up on the filling of vacant posts? No, we have not. Our analysis has really focused we were really concerned with to what extent is there understanding and the reasons for it at that point in time. So we haven't done any post paper kind of follow-ups to see if of course our paper only came out this year, but we haven't really followed up on what has been done to vacant posts in the last year or so. But of course, as some members may have noticed, there's been a release by the National Treasury that says basically there's been a freezing of posts. So that will be interesting to explore in terms of this issue of vacant posts that we're experiencing. And just to emphasize that, you know, not all provinces were included because we did do a sampling. And of course, this is a tool that, you know, economists and researchers use when there's a limitation to time, to resources and so forth. And so we had resorted to focusing on just the four provinces. And that's because you'll notice that we publish papers on, like Derek already outlined, on education, on health, on higher education, on DSD. So we were really looking to roll out multiple papers. And so there was a limitation, particularly pre-budget. In terms of, there was a question, and I think this will be the last question that I answer. In terms of the replacement of SRD, in our MTBPS 2022, you know, we had raised the question about one of the considerations in what must happen after, or the questions we must be asking about the SRD, is so Treasury had initially proposed that we should move from we shouldn't go for a basic income grant, but rather that we should go for a job seeker grant and an SRD, or rather a caregiver grant. And some of the issues that we had raised was questions of sustainability. What happens to these people that are currently receiving this grant? You know, do you just drop them off? So these are some of the considerations that I think would be important to consider. How are we seeing the grants as investments, which I've already pointed to, but also just thinking about how our current policy measures progressively realizing the constitutional rights to social protection. That would be a real consideration around, you know, how to think about, or some of the questions to consider when thinking of the replacement of the SRD. But these are contained in our MTBPS 2022 presentation. I think there was a question about how do we justify more allocations? And so, of course, this depends, and that would be your answer, to say in some cases, underspend is being driven by lower allocations, which National Treasury also acknowledges that sometimes when you cut expenditure, you actually make the program less efficient, right? But whereas in some cases, underspend is driven by different things. And I think for the committee, it's important to distinguish where underspending is being driven by inadequate budget allocations versus other factors which might need to be dealt with. And of course, I already mentioned this question of vacant post freeze being frozen potentially in the MCBPS. And so how might that impact, I think looking forward, how might that impact underspending in these departments that are already underspending because they've got vacant posts? I'll hand over to my next colleague.
Nelia, do you want to come in? Sorry, thank you. Thank you, Wusi. Nelia, do you want to come in? Do you have any inputs?
I'm covered. Thank you.
All right. Mapula, there was a specific question there. Do you want to come and cover that, Mapula?
There wasn't really a question, Dr. Janjis, except that Mr. Ryder thought I was too fast, but I was like following instructions I saw on the chat. I was like, really summarizing. Yes, we can really say there is a bigger report in terms of the conditional grants that we are doing. So we can engage in terms of like specifically on those conditional grants and their performance and more like in detail and slowly. And we are open as suggested by the committee to share with the portfolio committees and other committees in terms of this work. Yeah.
All right. No, thank you so much, Chairperson. I think what we'll do with the point raised by Mr. McDonald is a very important point. Can we come back to the committee about that point? And we'll definitely make sure that we revert to that tomorrow or by Friday, Chairperson. Thank you so much to members and the Chairperson and colleagues in this regard. I think we've covered all the most of the questions. Yeah.
Okay. Can we agree, by Friday, let's not give you more pressure because also there are other issues that need to clarify between yourself and Western Cape that they have raised. And the request that you are requested to share some information with the committee. That will also help when we make our recommendations or a report. But I think we overall, as members of this committee, we are happy. We are really appreciating your availability. And we want once more to encourage you to have more engagement with the sector departments and let this perception of saying that you only work with finance and appropriation be killed. You can be of more assistance to those because you are an officer for parliament, no, you have a unit or an institution within parliament. So all of us as parliamentarians, as our sectors, we need to benefit from you. Thank you very much. And everybody else who is not a member of the committee, team appropriations, you can be released. Thank you very much. I'm not opening the video, honorable members, because like I indicated, at least I can still speak. Can we have the minutes on the screen? The minutes of the 14th, honorable members, do you have a quorum?
Yes, Chairperson, we do.
Okay. That's the first page. Let's move before we lose most of the members. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4, nothing. page 5. Thank you. That's the last page. Adjournment, the last item 6. Can I get a mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection?
I move, Eunice. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. A seconder?
I'm second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Moss. And I think we have come to the end of our meeting. I really want to appreciate and thank you, Honorable members. I know, like Honorable Nyambiswe this morning, during the course of the day, that you cannot, praise a fish for swimming, but you are overstretching yourselves and you show commitment, and one needs to give credit where it's due and keep encouraging you. Some of us were not in good health, but we were able to do the work as expected. Thank you very, very, very much, and keep well. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good night.
Long live the Chair.
Good night.
Thank you, Chair.